We'll move to question time. Senator Cadell.
Thank you, President. My question is to the Minister representing the Minister for Climate Change and Energy, Senator Wong. Minister, your colleague, Minister Bowen, has repeatedly claimed Labor's family car tax is based off the American model. Last week, the Biden administration responded to legitimate industry concerns about its version of the fuel efficiency standards by significantly delaying implementation timelines and reducing the cost of emissions, the level of emission reduction. This was done, according to reports, to support consumer choice in the United States and to avoid expensive price hikes for households. Given the Albanese government's proposed family car tax sets a much more aggressive rate of emissions than was previously allowed in America, will the government follow President Biden's lead and listen to the legitimate concerns about its fuel efficiency model?
Thank you, Senator Cadell. Minister Wong.
Thank you, President, and I thank Senator Cadell for the question and for his interest in this area, and I hope that his newfound enthusiasm from the Biden administration might extend to a renewed commitment to renewables, a belief in climate change actually being something that we need to respond to and to deal with, a belief that an energy transition matters. I mean, there are a whole range of things that this administration is engaging in that your party room refused to engage in, refused to do, refused to support, and in fact, for nearly a decade in government, ensured that there was no policy reform, there was no energy policy, there was no progress when it comes to this issue, all because people didn't—some people over there—didn't believe that climate change was a thing. Was the thing. And in fact, they still don't. They still don't. But I do thank him for his question about the vehicle emission standards. I would note that the vehicle efficiency standards response from those opposite appears to be an argument that people shouldn't be able to buy cars that might cost them less to run, might cost them less to run, might cost them less in terms of fuel. That seems to be the approach from those opposite. Let's make sure we require Australians to purchase vehicles that the rest of the world doesn't want to buy that will cost them more to run because they'll have to use more fuel. That appears to be, the policy proposition from those opposite. You know, they vote against energy caps and price assistance as well. But in answer to the question, Senator Cadell, we are very aware of the Biden administration's policy in this area. That, along with
thank you, Minister.
The consultation
the
will be examined very close.
Senator Cadell, first supplementary.
Under the Biden government's fuel efficiency model, there are substantial subsidies in place for American auto manufacturers and subsidies for people to buy EVs. However, Labor's proposed family car tax would require companies... would require companies producing petrol, diesel and even hybrid vehicles to purchase credits from EV makers. Is the government aware of any modelling on the cost of subsidies that will be paid to the growing number of Chinese EV makers and Tesla as a result of the proposed car tax?
Thank you, Senator Cadell. Minister Wong.
I'm unclear,
order.
And I apologise, Senator order. Cadell, if I have misunderstood your question.
Minister Wong, please resume your seat. Senator Henderson, I have called the Senate to order and you completely ignored that direction. Minister Wong, please continue.
Senator Cadell, I'm unclear whether that last part of your question actually related to what the Biden administration was doing in relation to subsidies and the like. If so, that's a somewhat odd question to ask now because we wouldn't model necessarily what happens in the US market. But I'm happy to make this point more generally. Of course, we are aware of what has occurred in the United States and what has occurred in other international markets.
Minister Wong, please resume your seat. Senator Cadell.
Explanation, which is allowed, I believe. The question was about the energy car tax in Australia at the end.
It was, but it also went to what the Biden administration are doing, Senator Cadell. Minister Wong.
But what I would say is the government has had a consultation process. The government will consider the feedback from the industry and others when we finalise these standards. And of course, there's one aspect of that. I'm sure that the ministers will look at what has occurred in relevant international markets, which, as you know, Senator, we do lag.
Thank you, Minister. The time for answering has expired. Senator Goodell's second supplementary.
Given we are in the middle of a cost of living crisis, why should Australian families have to pay more for the cars they want and need, like the Ford Ranger, like the Toyota Hilux, to help fund subsidies for Tesla and Chinese EV auto owners?
Minister Wong. Minister Wong.
Order. Well, perhaps the question is, why shouldn't Australians be able to buy cars that save them money? What about having some choice? What about some choice? I mean, I'm always interested, isn't it? The coalition love markets when it suits them. Like, they don't want to regulate wages. But oh boy, they're quite happy. They're quite happy to push back on choice where they have an ideological bent against a particular market regulation. I mean, this is about choice. This is about giving Australians the opportunity to buy cars that save them money.
Senator O'Sullivan.
We are behind so much of the developed world on this. We've gone through a proper consultation process. I'm sure the ministers will consider all of the consultation carefully, as well as looking at the international evidence.
Senator Walsh.
Thank you, President. My question is to the Minister representing the Minister for Employment and Workplace Relations, Senator Watt. I am aware that Minister Burke has said that boosting and protecting wages is a key part of the government's plan to help Australians deal with cost of living pressures. How is the Albanese Labor government working to get wages moving for low-paid workers?
Minister Watt.
Thanks, President, and thanks, Senator Walsh, who, like so many people on this side of the chamber, has devoted her working life to supporting the interests of low-paid workers. And Senator Walsh knows that the Albanese government's number one priority is addressing inflation and cost of living pressures. We know a lot of people are doing it tough, and that's why each and every day we're working to ensure that Australians earn more and keep more of what they earn. From the 1st of July, Labor's tax cuts for more taxpayers will help make that happen. But the other way we can ensure workers can deal with cost of living pressures is to get wages moving again, to ensure that workers earn enough to provide for their loved ones and get ahead. Our workplace relations reforms are helping low-paid workers who are doing it the toughest. And today, we announced that the Albanese government's submission to the Fair Work Commission annual wage review, which impacts 2.9 million workers relying on awards, will recommend that real wages of Australia's low-paid workers should not go backwards. People on the lowest wages have the least capacity to deal with rising prices, and we want to ensure that their wages keep pace. That's why we've backed in low-paid workers every year at the Fair Work Commission. What a pleasant change. What a pleasant change that occurred after the change of government. And as a result of this change under the Albanese Labor government, the minimum wage under our government has increased by 5.2% in 2022 and 8.6% in 2023. Now, a full-time minimum wage worker, like a cleaner or a retail worker, is earning $110 more per week since Labor took office. Now, we know the opposition have consistently voted against better wages, against secure jobs, and against closing the gender pay gap. So it's no surprise that today they still can't bring themselves to support our actions. They spent 10 years keeping wages low as a deliberate design feature of their economic policy, and they're still at it today.
Thank you, Minister Watt. Senator Walsh, first supplementary.
Thank you, President. Noting that many Australians, particularly in low-paid industries like community and disability services, retail and hospitality, are feeling under the pump as a result of cost of living pressures, how is the Albanese Labor government helping workers in low-paid sectors earn more and keep more of what they earn?
Minister Watt.
Thanks again, Senator Walsh. Well, how is the government helping workers earn more? It may be a novel idea to those opposite, but we're actually doing it by improving workers' pay and conditions. The Albanese Labor government's workplace relations reforms are helping low-paid workers who are doing it tough to earn more by criminalising wage theft, stopping the underpayment of workers through the use of labour hire, and stopping unpaid overtime, all things that were opposed by the coalition in opposition, just as they opposed those types of changes when they were in government. Our reforms are clearly working, with average wages growing at 4.2%, double the rate that occurred under those opposite. But Senator Walsh also asked me how we are helping workers keep more of what they earn. And of course, from the 1st of July, Labor is delivering a tax cut for all Australian taxpayers. All 13.6 million taxpayers will receive a tax cut, and more than 95% of nurses, teachers and truckies will receive a bigger tax cut under Labor.
Senator Walsh, second supplementary.
Minister, given that low wages are a deliberate design feature of the Liberal and National Economic Plan, how is the Albanese Labor government working to reverse a decade of deliberate wage stagnation under those opposite?
Minister Walsh.
Thanks, Senator Walsh. And don't we enjoy it when we hear the moaning over the other side every time we talk about the fact that under Labor you'll earn more and keep more of what you earn, and under the Coalition you'll earn less and work more? And the reason they groan about it is they're so embarrassed about their record, and they're embarrassed about the fact that they still haven't worked out that it was time to shift policy when they lost the election. We know that if this mob are ever re-elected to government, they will continue their traditional policies of keeping wages low, keeping conditions low, and letting the gap between rich and poor get even wider. They have now voted against higher wages for workers more than 27 times in this term of parliament alone. And today we heard the member for New England, who we know still wants to come back as the National Party leader, continue describing pay rises for low-paid workers as window dressing. Well, I don't think that pay rises for low-paid workers are window dressing, and no one on the Labor side does either.
Thank you, Under Minister, Labor, you'll keep more of what you earn. The time for answering has expired. Senator O'Sullivan.
Thank you, President. My question is to the Minister representing the Treasurer, Senator Gallagher. The most recent Finder RBA survey found that economists' positive sentiment across employment, wage growth, housing affordability, cost of living and household debt was at its second lowest point in the history of Finder's RBA survey at 10%, second only to March 2020, which was at 8%. Meanwhile, new ABS data has revealed that over the 12 months to December 2023, all five living cost indexes rose by up to 6.9%. Isn't it true that Australians are still worse off under Labor than they were a year ago?
Thank you, Senator O'Sullivan. Minister Gallagher.
Thank you. Well, there is no shortage of economic data that's published regularly about the high, and particularly focusing on the high inflationary environment that we inherited when we came to government in May 2022, and that has had an impact on how, you know, on business confidence and how people are feeling. They're feeling under pressure. I don't think we've ever pretended otherwise, and that's why our entire effort since coming to government has been on how to ensure that inflation comes down and that we're able to make sensible investments to ease cost of living. To ease cost of living where we can. It's why we did the energy bill rebates that you opposed. It's why we put the caps on the gas industry and that you opposed as well. And now we're seeing some relief in that area with prices coming back a little bit. But we're not pretending that people aren't feeling under pressure. They are, and that's why our budgets have been focused on investments where we can afford to make them, where they're sensible, where they don't add to inflation. In fact, they take pressure off inflation, and the energy bill rebates and the rental relief did exactly that, where we can provide investments into childcare, where we can do more in housing. We've got a massive agenda in housing to provide more social and affordable housing options for people, working with the states and territories. It's why we did our tripling the bulk billing rate. It's why we've opened the urgent care centres so people can get access to free or affordable healthcare. That's all of why our budgets have been targeted on making sure we can ease that cost of living, repair the budget, lower the debt, deliver a surplus, and build up the drivers we need for future economic growth.
Thank you, Minister. Senator O'Sullivan, first supplementary.
Thank you, President. A recent report by Finance Research Institute Mozo revealed three quarters of Australian mortgage holders are worried about their mortgage repayments in the face of consecutive rate hikes under this government. Why is the government ensuring rates stay higher for longer by committing to billions in new spending?
Thank you, Senator O'Sullivan. Minister Gallagher.
Well, I don't accept that question at all. It won't be any surprise, I think, to those opposite. We have been doing what we can, where we have areas of responsibility to take to work alongside the bank as they've been undertaking their tightening policy, while we have been making sure we're not adding to the work that they need to do. And I note those opposite like to talk about this, you know, this calculator they've done of spending. What they don't tell you is that the vast majority of that, a large part of that, is actually parameter variations for pensions, for JobSeeker, for other investments like that, estimates variations that I can only presume that you opposite do not support. So you don't support indexing the age pension, clearly. You don't support indexing JobSeeker. You don't support all of those areas which automatically happen to ensure that when inflation is high that we are supporting people.
Thank you, Minister. The time for answering has expired. Senator O'Sullivan, second supplementary.
Since the Albanese government has come to power, the cost of food is up 9%, the cost of housing is up 12%, the cost of insurance is up 22%, and the cost of gas is up 27%. With around 50,000 households due to exhaust their savings buffers by the end of next year due to record interest rates, how many Australians do you expect will lose their home under this government?
Thank you, Senator O'Sullivan. Minister Gallagher.
Thank you. Well, what Senator O'Sullivan doesn't say, of course, is that the interest rates started for mortgage holders started increasing under your government. Right, right. Only one. Yeah, right. And where inflation was its highest was under your government. Was under your government. It actually came off every quarter since, as we dealt with the significant policy issues and areas that your government, when in power, left unaddressed. For example, the energy crisis that we walked into, where Minister Bowen left the swearing-in ceremony to deal with the fact that the lights were going to go out. Because what had happened? Oh, that's right, a decade of failure to deal with those significant challenges. And we see it everywhere. We see it in housing. You talk about housing. The Commonwealth wasn't interested in housing unless it was about ransacking your super to go and buy a house for those young
Minister
people.
Gallagher, please resume your seat. Order, Senator O'Sullivan.
Point of order on relevance. In the 7 seconds remaining, I'm wondering if the minister could return to the final part of my question, which is, how many Australians do you expect will lose their home this year?
The minister is being directly relevant, Senator O'Sullivan. Minister Gallagher. Oh, you finished? Sorry. Senator Cox.
My question is to the Minister representing the Minister for Indigenous Australians, Minister Gallagher. The government's first legislative change following the referendum is the Offshore Worker Safety Bill, in which Schedule 2, Part 2, gives the Minister for Resources the power to silence First Nations voices who are fighting to protect their sea country, including sea country that might be part of the Indigenous Protected Areas, the IPAs. Australia has also signed the High Seas Treaty in September last year, which sets out new obligations regarding marine protected areas on the high seas. My question is, are areas of sea country in IPAs exempt from offshore leases, and will they be included in any protected areas established or managed under the High Seas Treaty?
Thank you, Senator Cox. Minister Gallagher.
Thank you. And I thank Senator Cox for the question about the offshore gas safety legislation. And we've certainly, I think, had feedback from a whole range of organisations, including environmental organisations and First Nations groups, along with the industry, that have told the government that our system of consultation is not working, which is why we are developing those amendments to legislation. And there'll be further amendments, as I understand it, that will be moved in the House. And that will need to make sure that those regulatory changes will be consistent with our national environmental laws. I think this is probably more a question better asked to the Minister for Resources rather than the Minister for Indigenous Australians, but we are aware of, certainly in the consultations around this bill, of feedback from First Nations groups and ministers, including the Minister for Resources, Minister King, has been doing the consultations around that legislation. So my advice is there will be no changes to rigorous environmental assessments No environmental standards will be watered down. There will be no fast track for offshore projects, but this bill will allow some reform to improve the safety of offshore gas workers and to fix the broken community consultation process on offshore projects that we have had feedback from those numerous stakeholders, including First Nations groups.
Thank you, Minister. Senator Cox, first supplementary.
Thanks, President. What's the point in having these protected areas if the government will not commit to protecting these areas from the drilling against the wishes of First Nations people in Indigenous protected areas? That's why it's to this minister.
Thank you, Senator Cox. Minister Gallagher.
Yeah, thank you. I think, and Minister King's, and I'm not sure whether senators have been aware of it, but there have been amendments moved in the House to better capture the government's long-standing intention to maintain the integrity of our environmental and community protection regime. And so just refer you back to my earlier answer where I said the bill...
Minister Gallagher, please resume your seat. Senator Cox.
Just on a point of relevance, President, I was asking directly about the Indigenous protected areas, which is the responsibility of the Minister for Indigenous Affairs.
Thank you. And your original question went to a part of a bill, so I do believe the minister's being relevant. Minister Gallagher.
Thank you. And so my advice has been that the bill does not change the legal requirements for offshore consultation in any way, shape or form. So I think that does answer that question. There will be no changes to rigorous environmental assessments, no environmental standards will be watered down, and there will be no fast track for offshore projects involved or covered by this legislation. There have been some amendments moved, which I think better capture that focus and the consultations that Minister King has done to date.
Thank you, Minister. Senator Cox, second supplementary.
Thank you, President. Why is this government ignoring the wishes of First Nations people who are fighting to protect their sea country and refusing to remove Schedule 2, Part 2 of this offshore worker safety bill?
Thank you, Senator Cox. Minister Gallagher.
Thank you. Well, the government doesn't ignore anybody or any stakeholder. In fact, we have made it part of our government's priority is to consult across the board and to consult widely on legislation and policies, because this government is about bringing people together, not dividing them. We are a very different government to the one that came before us and a very different to the opposition that sits there, opposes everything, no new ideas, negativity all the way. And it is strange, I accept Senator Rennick, because you're not a great bringer together of people, but this is the approach that we take here, is we want to consult with people.
Minister, please resume your seat. I'll call you, Senator Scar. I'm just waiting for order across the chamber. Senator Scar.
A personal reflection, President.
Senator Wong.
President, I'm sure Senator Gallagher will withdraw if Senator Rennick wishes her to, but I don't think he markets himself as the consensus guy. So, I thought it was in good nature, but if the senator wishes her, the senator wishes Senator Gallagher to withdraw, I'm sure she will.
Senator Rennick, please resume your seat. Thank you. Thank you, Minister.
Interjections that were occurring, but I withdraw. But we don't ignore stakeholders on projects. The approach we take is that ministers work with stakeholders. If there are areas where we disagree, explain why we disagree. But on this one, Minister King is leading those consultations.
Thank you, Minister. Senator Payman.
Thank you, President. My question is to Minister for Women, Senator Gallagher. I note the Minister recently launched Working for Women, a strategy for gender equality, which identified a number of areas of focus, including women's safety, sharing and valuing paid and unpaid care work, women's leadership and women's economic equality. I also understand that the Albanese Labor government will make a submission to the Fair Work Commission's 2023-24 annual wage review, recommending that wages don't go backwards. Given that women are disproportionately represented in low-paid and award-reliant jobs, how will the government's submission advocate for these women workers in our economy?
Thank you, Senator Payman. Minister Gallagher.
Thank you very much, President. I thank Senator Payman for the question and really for a young senator, the amount of work she's already done in her career advocating on behalf of low-paid and women workers across Australia, but particularly in WA. Women are disproportionately represented in low-paid and award-reliant jobs, and we don't want to see women going backwards with what they earn. So despite the recent improvement in the gender pay gap, there remains a substantial disparity in earnings between men and women, and we are committed to continue to work to close this gap. The government is doing its job making the structural reforms that allow women to get a better deal out of the economy. And our submission to the annual wage review sticks up for millions of Australian women who want a better deal in their pay packets each week. Analysis in our submission shows that there is still work to do to lift women's labour force participation, that increases in the minimum wage are likely to decrease gender pay gaps and increase the incentive for women to enter the workforce or work more hours than they currently do, and that increases to minimum and award wages provide income boosts for those most likely to be in less secure employment, such as casual employees and multiple job holders, also where a lot of women find their employment. So Labor's Secure Jobs, Better Pay reforms put gender equality front and centre in the Fair Work Commission's considerations, and through those reforms, gender equality has been added to the minimum wages and modern award objectives. And as everyone in this place knows, that women's economic equality is a core priority for this government. We'll continue to advocate for women's economic equality in all that we do and all of the policy work and the decisions that we take through the budget process.
Thank you, Minister. Senator Payman, first supplementary.
Thank you, Minister. I note the Albanese Labor government has announced several measures to deliver structural reform to the economy to help women get a better deal. How does the government's Working for Women strategy, released earlier this month, set the scene for the submission that the government will make to the Fair Work Commission later this week?
Thank you, Senator Payman. Minister Gallagher.
Thank you very much. And I thank Senator Payman for the question. Working for Women does build on the work that we've already done, as Senator Payman points out. It tells us that we won't achieve equality for women without structural changes across multiple policy areas. So that women's, because we know that women's experiences aren't siloed. So women's safety is not disconnected from economic security and equality. The gender pay and earnings gap are not separate from the significant caring role that women play in our community. The low pay of feminised industries, especially in the care sector, links to how we as a community value the care work and value and respect women and the work that they do. And women's leadership and representation in decision making is directly connected to designing and implementing policies that work for women. This is a serious and important work for which Labor has a clear plan and a clear an ongoing commitment.
Thank you, Minister. Senator Payman, second supplementary.
Thank you, Minister. It is clear that the Albanese Labor government is working hard for all Australians, including Australian women. How will the upcoming budget and the initiatives the government has already announced deliver a better deal for Australian women, and why is it so important to have women in positions of leadership to deliver these important reforms?
Thank you, Senator Payman. Minister Gallagher.
Thank you, and I thank Senator Payman for that question. Well, we do have a plan, and of course we're here proud members of the first federal government that has a majority of members who are women, and that does ensure that gender equality is not a fight that we have in our party room. Everybody understands that there is work to be done, and that we need to address it using the levers of government. And we've been doing that by publishing the Labor's, publishing employer gender pay gaps, by expanding PPL to 26 weeks, through our tax cuts, where 90% of women will get a bigger tax cut, $4.7 billion for our cheaper childcare plan, expanding parenting payments single, reforming our workplace relations system to make it work better for women, our plan to end violence against women and children, and all the work that we're doing in the health space, our gender responsive budgeting, and of course our gender equal cabinet and government, where we have women sitting around the table listening to women and united in getting on with and working for women.
Has expired. Senator Roberts.
Thank you, President. My question is to the Minister representing the Minister for Immigration and the Minister representing the Minister for Infrastructure, Senator Watt. Minister, what is the number of homes required to house the 549,000 people who arrived on permanent visas in 2023? How many houses?
Thank you, Senator Roberts. Minister Watt.
Thank you, Senator Roberts, for your question. I know you asked a very similar question last week, and as I pointed out to you last week, it's understood and expected that migration levels in Australia have peaked, that they peaked in 2022-23 and are forecast to drop in half by next year. And that is as a direct result of the changes made by the Albanese government, particularly to tackle the rorts that were occurring in the international student visa system that we inherited from the former government. And the changes that we made late last year are already having a significant and immediate impact, with student visa grants down by more than 35% on last year's level. You know, we are obviously strong supporters of the international education system. It's a very important export industry for Australia. It provides a wide range of benefits to Australia and the countries from which students come from. But the reality is that the system, unfortunately, was being rorted by a number of companies, and that needed to be tackled. It wasn't tackled by the former government, but we are tackling it, and that is having an effect. Now, Senator Roberts, one of the things I also pointed out to you last week was that it's a little bit ironic.
Order.
It's a little bit ironic getting a question from a One Nation senator or a Coalition senator or at times a Greens Party senator about what this government is doing about housing numbers. Because, of course, what we've seen over and over again is a coalition between the Liberals, the Nationals, One Nation and the Greens Party teaming up to block action on housing by the Albanese Labor government. We saw it with the Housing Australia Future Fund. And Senator Roberts, if you were actually sincere in your concern, you would have voted for the Housing Australia Future Fund to build more homes. And if you were sincere in your concern, you'd be voting for the Help to Buy legislation that we're currently trying to get through this parliament, but is being blocked again by the Greens Party, by One Nation and by the Liberals and the Nationals.
Thank you, Minister Watt. Senator Roberts, first supplementary.
Thank you, President. Minister, what is the number of schools and hospitals required over the next 5 years to meet the needs of these 549,000 new permanent arrivals last year? How many schools and hospitals? Number, please.
Thank you, Senator Roberts. Minister Watt.
Well, it obviously goes to reason that Australia does need more hospitals and more schools in order to deal with a growing population, whether that be a population growing through natural increase or a population growing through migration. And again, Senator Roberts, we are trying to tackle 10 years of underinvestment by a coalition government in our health system and in our education system. And that's why Minister Jason Clare has only just recently reached agreements with a number of states and territories to increase education funding to the states, and why through National Cabinet in the last few months the Prime Minister has reached agreements with the Premiers about increased funding for healthcare across Australia.
Order.
We know that 10 years of coalition
Senator
government,
Henderson.
Propped up by One Nation, saw underinvestment in healthcare, underinvestment in hospitals,
Minister
underinvestment
Watt,
in our schools.
Senator Henderson, I called for order, then I called you personally. I would ask you to come to order and stop being disrespectful. Minister Watt, please continue.
Thanks, President. So, Senator Roberts, one of these days you and your colleague, Senator Hanson, might like to back in a government that's actually delivering on health
you,
and education.
Minister, the time for answering has expired. Senator Roberts, second supplementary.
Thank you, President. Minister, planning for immigration requires planning for the houses, schools, hospitals, transport, food and drinking water that new arrivals need. We won't let you dump 2.3 million long-stay arrivals on the states and then wash your hands of them. This is the second time this sitting I've asked for the numbers, and the second time you have failed to provide them. If you have them, please provide them, and if you don't have them, then clearly this government is not up to the job of running Australia.
Thank you, Senator Roberts. Minister Watt.
Thanks, President. Thanks, Senator Roberts. Well, for Senator Roberts, for starters, I would take issue with your description of migrants as people who are dumped on the community. I think that is an offensive way to describe the contribution of millions of Australians who come from a migrant background. It's not funny, Senator Roberts. It's not funny to talk about dumping people or people being dumped.
I'll come to you, Senator Roberts. Minister Walt, when answering the question, please direct your answers to the chair. Senator Roberts?
A point of order. I'm not laughing at immigrants. I am half Senator, one. I'm laughing Senator at the minister.
Roberts. Senator Roberts, that's not a point of order. Minister Watt.
And I think that's especially the case now that Australia, I think the figures are approximately one in two Australians is either born overseas or their parents are born overseas. And we know that migrants make a great contribution to our country. The reality is, though, that as a result of the increase in migration after the pandemic and as a result of the rorts in the international student system that were left behind by the coalition, action did need to be taken, and that's what we're doing. But what we're also doing is investing in the houses that Senator Roberts and his colleagues in the Liberal, National and most of all the Greens party want to keep blocking. If you want more housing, there's a really simple thing you can do. It's to vote with Labor for more housing rather than always oppose it.
Thank you, Minister. Senator Dean Smith.
Thank you very much, President. My question is to the Minister representing the Treasurer, Senator Gallagher. Last year, when asked whether or not the Albanese government would reduce the fuel tax credit for off-road use, Senator Watt responded, "I can confirm that this government has no intention whatsoever of grabbing rid of it. I recognise that the Grattan Institute has made that suggestion, but we have categorically ruled it out, both I and the Prime Minister." He also said that touching the diesel fuel rebate is not on this government's agenda. We are not considering it. We are not working on it. Minister, can you confirm that this remains the position of the Albanese government on the diesel fuel rebate, and can you emphatically rule out any changes to negative gearing under this government in the same way that your colleague, Senator Watt, was able to on the diesel fuel rebate?
Thank you, Senator Smith. Minister Gallagher.
We're in that time of the Festival of Parliament and Festival of Democracy, where we head towards budget and it's the rule-in, rule-out game on every front, so that you then go and start generate, worrying up, go to that scare campaign slot machine, put your coins in, rehash all the campaigns that you love to go out and scare the community with. You can be absolutely guaranteed that all the decisions that we take in the budget will be in the best interests of Australia. We've made it clear the areas where we have been focusing on tax reform. They have been with our very significant changes that were made to the former tax plan on stage three, where we've ensured that 100% of taxpayers get a tax cut. That will be in the budget. We've made it clear that we're clamping down on multinationals through tax reform. Those changes are before the Senate. PRRT, those changes are before the Senate. High balance super accounts, those changes are before the Senate. That has been the area of focus for us in tax reform. That's a pretty considerable amount of tax reform, I would say, that's before this parliament and that we should be able to deal with. The other areas of focus for the budget is doing what we can to continue to ease cost of living pressures for Australians and their households, and of course the tax cuts will go part of the way to supporting them. They'll be a significant part of the budget. We've announced that we're doing super on PPL, again a significant change and a significant investment, but one that we think is important. They'll have significant investments in defence. And I think I've outlined those areas where we've focused our energy on tax reform. So I would say to Senator Smith, I mean, I know what this is all about, the rule-in, rule-out game. I've been clear about the areas of focus for us on tax reform. They are either before the parliament or have passed the parliament.
Thank you, Minister. Senator Dean Smith, first supplementary.
Thank you, President. Minister, can you provide a clear assurance that your government will not seek to make changes to the capital gains tax in the upcoming budget? A clear assurance.
Minister Gallagher.
Well, I think the Treasurer has already done that. He's made it clear that those are not areas of focus for the government in that area that you raise. Our focus has been on getting wages moving, making sure that people earn more, and then through our tax changes that they're able to keep more of what they earn, continuing to support the energy transition and how that occurs across the economy, the work we're doing in aged care, the work we're doing in health care, the work we're doing in early childhood education. They are all key areas of focus. Rebuilding and reinvesting in Medicare, another area of key focus for this government. all of our effort is going into managing the economic circumstances of the time, so making sure we're not adding to the inflation challenge, that we're continuing to see inflation moderate, that where we can find room in the budget, that we are paying down debt. Our interest bill is enormous, that we're managing that and making sensible investments where we can to make a difference to the lives of the Australian people.
Senator Dean Smith, second supplementary.
Thank you, President. Minister, after ruling out changes to superannuation, you doubled the tax on super for Australian retirees. After ruling out changes to franking credits, your first budget included increased taxes on franking credits. After ruling out changes to Stage 3 tax cuts, you broke your promise. How can you seriously believe Australians would trust a word that you would say about taxes or on any other policy matter?
Thank you, Senator Dean Smith. Minister Gallagher.
Australian people trust governments that front up and explain the decisions they're taking. Yep. And so where we did change our position on Stage 3, I should say, which is actually your policy now, Senator Smith, you voted to support it, that you front up and you explain what has led to this change, why the circumstances have meant that you have decided on this change, and you be upfront about it. And we certainly, in all of the discussions we have, whether it be with stakeholders, whether it be with constituents across our communities, that is the approach the government has taken. And I can tell you, when we are looking at our budget and putting together our budget, we're repairing the damage that we inherited. We're paying down debt. We've delivered the first surplus in 15 years. We're making room for important investments, investments that were overlooked for a decade, including on the energy transition that you opposite are still struggling with, the concept that it even needs to happen. We're doing all of those
things. Thank you, Minister. Senator Hanson-Young.
Thank you, Madam President. My question is to the Minister representing the Minister for Environment, Senator Wong. Minister, native forest logging is destroying critical habitat and pushing our endangered animals to the brink. Land clearing is destroying the homes of our iconic koala. An area of forest the size of the MCG is logged and bulldozed every 2 minutes. Wildlife like the koala, the swift parrot, greater glider and the northern quoll are hurtling towards extinction due to the destruction of their native habitat. Every time more forest is logged, more native wildlife die. Will the government's new environment laws put a stop to the destruction of koala habitat?
Thank you, Senator Hanson-Young. Minister Wong.
Thank you, Senator Hanson-Young, for that question. And I will give you an answer now as far as I'm able. And then in relation to the last point, which is, I think, a point about koala habitat, I've just asked for some further information on that. Obviously, I understand it's the position of the Greens political party to ban native forest logging under federal law. The government's position is that Australia still needs timber products and therefore we would want to see a sustainable forestry industry. The government is investing over $300 million to modernise timber manufacturing infrastructure and to build the skills of the workforce and to grow more plantations, which already account for around 90% of the national timber production. The Senator is right. Native forests are valuable for many reasons, obviously carbon storage being one, native habitats including for endangered species animals like koalas, leadbeater's possums and greater gliders, and there are economic benefits from protecting native forests. The Minister is clear that she is committed to reforming environmental laws. These laws do not work for the environment and they don't work for business. And as part of the Nature Positive Plan, native forest logging will be regulated by national environmental laws through national environmental standards. In relation to threatened species, the Senator would also know that the Minister has announced a target of zero new extinctions. The investment of over $500 million to better protect threatened plants and animals and protecting an extra 40 million hectares of Australia's ocean and bush.
Thank you, Minister. Senator Hanson-Young, first supplementary.
Thank you. how does the government's commitment to zero new extinctions be met if you continue to destroy the homes of these animals?
Minister Wong.
Well, as I said, the government's view is that we already, Australia still needs timber products and wants sustainable forestry jobs. So that is why we have a very substantial investment in modernising the timber manufacturing infrastructure, building the skills of the forestry workforce and growing more plantations, which already account for around 90% of national timber production, as I said before, and that's a substantial increase over the last years. I mean, this is a substantial investment. I appreciate that the Greens political party wants a banning of native logging in Australia, as I've previously said in this place. I've travelled a reasonable amount, particularly in the countries of Southeast Asia, and I've never understood why it is progressive policy to believe that we should source timber from countries which don't have the same level of environmental regulation.
Thank you, Minister. The time for answering has expired. Senator Hanson-Young. Order. Order. Senator Hanson-Young, second supplementary.
Thank you, President. I think the drug dealers' defence is hardly worth commenting on in this argument. How much more native forest must be logged, and how many more koalas must die before enough is enough?
Thank you, Senator Hanson-Young. Minister Wong.
Well, Senator, you called it a drug dealers' defence.
Order.
Some of us have actually spent a lot of time in Southeast Asia and the forests of Southeast Asia, and when we in this country don't use any timber other than plantation timber, then there's a discussion to be had. The reality is we still use timber products, what we need to do is make sure we have a sustainable industry. And we continue to increase plantations, which have increased substantially over the last 20 years, as you know, both in terms of acreage but also in terms of the proportion of the industry. But I will push back on the assertion about drug dealers. I think that it is a reasonable proposition to say we live in a global economy and we ought to be trying to ensure that environmental protection occurs everywhere.
Thank you, Minister. The time for answering has expired. Senator Mariel Smith.
Thanks, President. My question is to the Minister representing the Minister for Climate Change and Energy, Senator Wong. In this morning's Age newspaper, I read that large investors and super funds are increasingly willing to fund renewable energy projects but have little desire to look at nuclear power. Can the Minister explain why the Albanese Labor government, as well as businesses and investors, is backing renewables, and what are the key concerns about nuclear energy?
Thank you, Senator Smith.
Thank you, Senator Smith, for that question. And as the Senator knows, since we were elected, she and other members of this government have worked to stabilise the energy market, to provide electricity bill relief to those who need it most, and help Australia's energy transition. And the article that Senator Smith refers to looks at data from an annual survey released by the Investor Group on climate change. And what that data shows is since the Albanese Labor government has improved policy certainty and regulatory certainty, guess what? Confidence has rallied. The confidence of investors has rallied. Now, Senator Cash has been interjecting since I started speaking because they really can't bear the fact that they destroyed policy certainty in this market by having in excess of 20 policies over 10 years. The same report also found that on the list of technologies investors were looking at, investors, guess where it was last? Nuclear power. Oh. Nuclear power. Now, for anyone actually interested in facts or evidence, this doesn't come as a surprise, because nuclear energy would increase bills, would cost taxpayers billions, risk reliability of the grid and won't be delivered on time. What a wonderful policy. But of course those opposite continue to cling to their nuclear fantasy. This morning the SMH published an article entitled
Not in my backyard. Liberals, Nationals go cold on nuclear. And it detailed how 12 opposition MPs have publicly backed nuclear energy but refused to commit to hosting a nuclear power plant in their own electorates. That's the courage of their convictions, isn't it? Even Mr O'Brien won't back a power station in his electorate. They have no plan. They have no plan. They delivered nothing in government, and they still have no plan.
The time for answering has expired. Senator Smith's first supplementary.
Well, yes, thank you, Minister, for that response. How is the Albanese Labor government setting up the clean, cheap, reliable and resilient energy network whilst also working to stabilise the energy market now?
I'm not going to call the minister until there's silence in the chamber. Order. Minister Wong.
Well, this government took action to shield Australian families and businesses from the worst of the global energy price spikes. Our energy price relief rebates rolled out to more than 5 million households, lowering bills by hundreds of dollars while also lowering inflation. The draft default market offer, maximum price that customers can be charged under standard contracts, is stabilising and trending downwards. Let's remember who voted against the price relief package.
Who was that?
Who has opposed every step this government, these senators, have taken to try and work
Senator
with Australians
Colbert.
And help Australians who are facing high energy
Senator
bills
Colbert.
Because of global markets? Those opposite opposed us every step of the way. We are delivering the Rewiring the Nation, Expanded Capacity Investment Scheme and the Gas Code. And the energy market operator says this is the lowest cost way to deliver a secure and reliable grid over coming decades.
Thank you, Senator Wong. Senator Smith, second supplementary.
Yes, thank you. I thank the minister as well for that response. What have energy experts said about the Albanese Labor government's approach to deliver a clean, cheap, reliable and resilient energy system?
Order. Order. May I invite all of those interjecting before I've even called the minister to make your contribution at some other time, but not question time. Minister Wong.
Thank you. Well, the Albanese government's energy plan is supported by independent advice from the CSIRO and the Australian Energy Market Operator. The plan of those opposite is supported by whom?
Jared.
It's by Jared Rennick and Senator Canavan. It's designed to placate all of those who for 10 years have stopped any action on climate change by a coalition government. The work we are doing is supported by businesses and investors alike, whereas those opposite, I think we've all lost count. Well, certainly it's over 20, how many energy policies they have had. The reality is this opposition has nothing positive to offer the country. They just say no. They oppose everything. We on this side are here to get things done, and we will, and we are.
Thank you, Minister Wong. Senator Patterson.
Thank you, Madam President. My question is to the Minister representing the Prime Minister, Senator Wong. Earlier this month, the United States House of Representatives passed a bill that would require ByteDance, a Beijing-headquartered company subject to the control of the Chinese Communist Party, to divest control of TikTok to make the app safe for US users. Will our government commit to similar legislation in Australia if the bill passes the US Congress?
Great. Thank you, Senator Patterson. Minister Wong.
President, in relation to that matter and the issues of the security of Australians, including online, what I can assure you of is that the government will always consider very carefully the advice of security agencies and experts and will act accordingly. The question was, will we look at a bill in another jurisdiction and act on that basis? Of course, we will take into account what others are doing, and there is legislation which would have an effect on the company on TikTok, as you say. Obviously, we will make policy in Australia considering the Australian circumstances. I would note that as a consequence of government consideration of this, that particular platform is regulated in terms of whether or not it is on government devices. Senator would be aware of that, and I think he was part of the discussions about that.
We always consider very carefully the advice provided by national security agencies on this matter and on all matters.
Senator Patterson, first supplementary.
Thank you, Madam President. Does the government share the concerns of our counterparts in the United States that a company who can be legally compelled to cooperate with Chinese intelligence agencies and to keep that cooperation a secret poses significant surveillance and foreign interference risks to Australia?
Thank you, Senator Patterson. Minister Wong.
Well, as I said, on this security matters, as on all security matters, we will take advice from agencies. I would again make this point that we've taken strong action to restrict access to TikTok on devices that handle sensitive data, in line with advice from intelligence and security agencies. I think it was April of last year we issued a direction restricting the use of TikTok on government devices. Obviously, we will monitor the bill in the United States. More broadly, we are concerned about the amount of data collected by social media platforms. We are concerned about the possibility of foreign interference on those platforms. We're concerned about disinformation on those platforms, and we've seen a lot of inaccurate information becoming much more prevalent in our democracy over the period of these last couple of years, and I think all of us need to guard against that.
Senator Patterson, second supplementary.
Thanks, Madam President. The Minister is right. In April last year, the Albanese government did finally decide to ban TikTok from Commonwealth-issued devices, almost a year after the Coalition originally called on them to do so, and after all of our Five Eyes partners and many other nations had already acted. Will the Albanese government commit to action to address the national security risks presented by TikTok and ensure that Australia is not again left behind?
Thank you, Senator Patterson. Minister Wong.
I think that was Senator Patterson, you know, delivering his own report card, wasn't it? Yes, and I'm very Senator, you know, with in relation to
order,
this,
Senator Rustin.
What I would say, Senator Patterson, is you
Senator
know.
Senator Rustin.
Would you like to stand up, Senator Rustin? You can stand up.
Minister, have you? Not
Senator,
at question time. Minister, please continue.
Senator.
Only 2 to go.
Order. Senator Ayres. Minister.
I think. Senator Patterson, you know we do work through the advice from agencies very carefully. You would also know, as given your role and your history, the how a government, a democratically elected government, deals with the prevalence of misinformation online, the increased disinformation that we see. All of these issues are much more difficult and larger in scale now than they were 3 to 5
Thank
years
you,
ago.
Minister.
And I would welcome you know, continued bipartisan
Minister,
work.
Minister, your time
together
for answering has expired. Senator Green.
Thank you, President. My question is to the Minister representing the Minister for Housing and Homelessness, Senator Farrell. Minister, I hear regularly from constituents in my home state of Queensland about the challenges of finding a safe and affordable place to call home, including essential workers struggling to find rentals close to their workplaces and young first home buyers finding it hard to enter the market. Can the Minister outline how the Albanese Labor government's broad and ambitious housing agenda is working to deliver more homes for Australia?
Minister Farrell.
Thank you, President, and thanks, Senator Green, for her very important question. We know there are still too many Australians without a safe and affordable place to call home. That's why we do have a broad and ambitious housing reform agenda to tackle the challenges we inherited after a decade of very little action from those opposite. We've committed more than $25 billion in new housing investments over the next decade. And unlike those opposite, we are working closely at all levels of government to deliver it. We're supporting states and territories through, firstly, the $3 billion new homes bonus, secondly, the $500 million housing support program, And thirdly, the $10 billion Housing Australia Future Fund, which will build 30,000 new homes. There's also the National Housing Accord, which will help deliver 2,000 affordable homes in cooperation with states and territories. In fact, President, homes are already being opened from our $2 billion Social Housing Accelerator, which will deliver another 4,000 new social homes. And our Help to Buy shared equity scheme will also help boost supply through an equity contribution of up to 40% for new homes. Help to Buy is targeted at helping low and middle income Australians get into a home with just a 2% deposit. It will give a leg up into the home ownership dream for 40,000 Australian households. And importantly, it will help add to supply. It's the home Australia needs for the Australians who need them.
Thank you, Minister. Senator Green, first supplementary.
Thank you, President. I thank the Minister for his answer. It's encouraging to hear that the Albanese government is taking action and offering support to help ease the housing pressures on Australians right across the country. On home ownership, can the Minister update the Senate about the Albanese government's significant reforms to housing, including the Help to Buy scheme, and what support the program has received from stakeholders?
Thank you, Senator Green. Minister Farrell.
Thank you, President, and thanks, Senator Green, for her first supplementary question. The Help to Buy will give Australians a leg up into the home ownership dream. And importantly, it will help add to supply. It's not just us saying that. The master builders have said, and I quote, "It will succeed in translating the strong demand for homes that is out there at the moment into newly built homes on the ground." Even the Queensland LNP leader, David Crisafulli, said programs that allow equity like this are firmly in our focus. Apparently he said that. This support from industry and the Queensland LNP is fantastic, and we look forward to similar support from Mr. Crisafulli's federal colleagues right over there.
Thank you, Minister. Senator Green, second supplementary.
Thank you, President, and thank you for that update. Minister, the Albanese Labor government is currently working to implement our plans to ease pressure on housing, help for Australians to buy their first home, and to get more rental stock into the market. Can the Minister outline any challenges to the passage of this vital assistance and how work to help more Australians buy their first home?
Thank you, Senator Green. Minister Farrell.
Thank you, President, and thanks, Senator Green, for her second supplementary question. Help to Buy will bring home ownership back into the reach for more Australians, many of whom are renting right now, awaiting for that opportunity. But there are obstacles, and they are sitting right over there.
Yeah, they are.
Those opposite talk a big game, but then they come in here and they vote against more homes. The Liberals and the Greens teamed up to delay the $10 billion Housing Australia Future Fund by 6 months. Every time the Liberals vote against delivering home ownership, help or building new homes, and the Greens delay these reforms, they are voting against Australians who need them.
Penny? Thank you, Minister. Minister Wong?
I ask for further questions to be placed on notice.
I thought you had one more.